RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. Brian, how are you today?
Dusty, I am rolling.
Excellent Tombstone reference. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Good deal. I don't know what movie that referenced, but I'm glad to hear a happy greeting.
The movie of Mike.
So, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned. As a reminder, so we recap our sessions and go over lessons that we learned so that you can learn from our experience. Today, we'll be talking about a game that we played that we cleverly titled Medieval Avengers. So, we probably ran this game a little over a year ago, Tribality. Tribality.com. It's probably older than that, but I had discovered it about a year ago that Tribality.com had generated 5th edition characters based on the Avengers. And the Avengers 2 had been out for a while. I had just seen it when we decided to run this game. So I handed you guys each one of the Medieval Avengers character sheets, and we ran a one-shot where we did the Avengers, but set in like D&D, low fantasy, medieval times. So we skipped straight to 12th level because the pre-gens from Tribality, which by the way, are really good and flavorful. Do we all agree that those generated characters are really good?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
Every one of them. I had 4 players, right? So we had Iron Man, we had Hawkeye, we had Brian. Who were you?
It was Captain America.
You're Captain America, and then I can't remember who the 4th person was. Who did Nathan play?
Was it Hulk?
Maybe. I think so. Actually, every one of those characters felt like both what I'm used to from comics and from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The characters felt spot on. So to play Marvel characters in a D20 5th edition game, super fun. So all credit to Tribality.com for those character builds. No affiliation with that website. They don't know who we are. They don't know we exist. But go there, search their site for the Avengers. And at this point, they've done Avengers pre-gens and the Captain America Civil War. They did some pre-gens based on that. They've got the Winter Soldier. They've got Black Panther. They have a ton of pre-gens at this point. So highly encourage you to check out those pre-gens. But we jumped straight to 12th level because the pre-gens are 12th level. How was that? Was that hard?
No, not really. I mean, so my character, if I remember, I mean, he was a Captain America was a fighter.
He was, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think a fighter is that hard to play in general when it comes to, like, the feats and stuff. If he had been a mage or a wizard or something, I probably would have gotten lost with all of the complexity. But, no, I mean, I think the fighter was very easy to play.
I'm actually having a little trouble remembering who I played. Was I Hawkeye?
Hawkeye's the one that died.
I remember Hawkeye died, but I can't remember who I actually was this game.
I'm pretty sure you were Hawkeye.
I think it was, and I think kind of along Brian's same line, I chose Hawkeye as a ranger just to avoid the whole complexity of being a wizard. But yeah, I don't remember having any problems rolling a higher level character or familiarizing myself with my abilities or my skills. I remember also being like, wow, this guy is crazy overpowered, which makes sense that they're a superhero.
Yeah, we can kind of enjoy that. This was our first high-level game, right?
Yeah.
We went through our entire 4th edition campaign, and we only hit 7th freaking level. Just because we played so rarely. And then we started playing 5th edition more, and we got those characters to about 8 or 9 in 5th edition, and then we just went to the one-shots and just played one-shots, one-shots, one-shots. We hadn't started our Pathfinder campaign yet. So we were talking, and it's like, you know, we've never played over level 10 before.
Didn't we have a game where we played level 20?
After this.
After. Okay.
Yeah, this wet our whistle for high-level play, because if you recall, this actually, kind of inspired by Avengers 2, opened up in combat. So we've already talked about, with Tanner, we discussed our L5R game where we opened in combat. That was a trick I learned from this game. This game predated our L5R game. So we opened up on combat. We opened up in an attack on a Hydra base with a bunch of mooks, like really low-level Hydra monsters. And I had like 3 of them for each of you. And you just mowed them down. I mean, mowed them down.
Yeah.
And I remember, Mike, you being like, dude, high-level characters are awesome.
Yeah.
So opened up in combat. It's a trick I've used before. Is there anything we can say about this that we didn't say with Tanner, Brian?
It works.
It works, yeah.
I mean, I think you have to do it strategically. I don't think you could start off in a really complex battle where there is a good chance of dying.
Oh, the battle has to not matter.
Yeah.
It has to be a battle where you know you're going to crush the bad guys, just like that battle in Avengers 2. But for me, it gives you a chance to use your character sheet.
Yep.
And to use your powers and to get kind of a feel for everything with no consequences.
I think one thing I remember about the opening of this game is you really stressed, think of it cinematically. Think about what your character would do. Think about what they would say. You know, if you come up with a quip after you just crush this guy, share that quip with us. I really remember that at the beginning of this game, and I think that really helped us latch on really quickly to these characters and just move from the start.
Yeah, it was meant to be cinematic. I'm glad that struck a chord. So, Brian, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, right? Mm-hmm. This was pretty much a really fun game that we really liked.
Yeah.
But after the game, you were not comfortable playing the Avengers in a medieval setting.
It just felt, I hate to say forced, but it was a little forced. I mean, if I'm going to play the Avengers, why not play the Avengers? I mean, I love Captain America. There's no secret about that. I mean, if you look at my wall, the superhero that you'll see most often is Captain America. I love Captain America. So I love the fact that in the games, people that the NPCs that I encountered were awestruck that they were speaking to me. I'm like, that is great. That is exactly what Captain America's life is like. But at the same time, if we're playing the Avengers, why not play the Avengers? Why does it have to be shoehorned into this low fantasy setting? I mean, yeah, it's fun. It's funny. It's cute. But it just kind of leaves me unsatisfied playing Captain America. It's kind of like reading that Neil Gaiman comic 1602 that came out years ago. A lot of people like it. Didn't work for me because, again, if the characters are the characters, why not have them in their, you know, natural setting?
To your point, I didn't much care for Gotham by Gaslight.
Yeah.
So I want to dig on this for a second. I know we don't have this in the show notes, but would you be open to playing another game as the Avengers, but, you know, I change similar to what we did with the Terror on the Katara, where we pulled a fantasy game forward into the 1920s pulp era. Would you be comfortable if I said, hey, you know what? Hand crossbows or pistols, heavy crossbows or rifles. And we did a game, an Avengers game in modern settings. In a modern setting, using 5th edition rules.
Absolutely. That would be fun.
I think the thing you got to be careful of there is trying to equate the Avenger superpowers and abilities into modern weaponry. I think it worked for me in medieval setting in that their powers were magic. So when Iron Man shoots lasers from his hand, it's not his photon focusing ray, it's magic.
Yeah, it was literally the witch bolt. He was an eldritch knight.
Yeah.
So it was the witch bolt spell.
Yeah. I think if you put them into a modern setting, you have to find something in your game mechanic to account for that, but not call it magic.
And there actually is, or was, a Marvel game. So the Margaret Weiss Game Company has the Marvel Heroics game based on the Cortex Plus system. I actually have that game. And Tanner made a good point when we spoke with him about how he finds the mechanics and the setting to be almost inextricable. And he doesn't enjoy generic systems. I find mechanics and flavor to be very extricable. And I'm comfortable using mechanics however I see fit to fit whatever story I'm trying to tell. Would you guys want to try it in an actual Marvel system? Or is the familiarity with D20 and 5th edition enough to say, you know what, we should really stick with 5th edition?
So for me, the Marvel system, whatever system they're using, I mean, it's not been play tested as much as D&D has been.
Yeah, the mechanics of 5e are pretty rock solid.
Yeah, if we were playing Hawkeye, so you have a bow and arrow, so to make it like an exploding arrow, so instead of doing like 1d6 damage or 1d6 plus 1, make it 1d6 plus 7, you know, for the
or even simpler than that, just attach a fireball spell to it.
Yeah, something like that.
Use the exact mechanics of a fireball spell to stand for an explosion.
Yeah, so I mean I think it could be easily modified to account for it. and not have to have some sort of, I'm not going to say janky, that it, like whatever system that the Marvel games have are janky, but they certainly aren't as robust.
And I own a ton of Cortex books, a ton. I've never played it with you guys because this is the conversation that we always have. You guys are comfortable with 5th edition, so that's where we stay. You guys have invested in 5th edition, so that's where we stay.
I'm fine doing something new. I like playing new systems. I just don't know that I don't know that I would want to invest in a new system, meaning to play several games. But I love learning new systems. I love being exposed to new systems.
All right, we'll play with that. But for this game, it was fun to do the Avengers in a system that we were familiar with in a medieval setting. Brian, did your concern about the medieval setting for this Avengers game stop you from having fun?
Oh no, at the end, just in hindsight, it just left me wanting more. Not meaning left me wanting more of this. It just I would have been more satisfied had it just been set in modern day. Or, you know, honestly, it might have been more fun. I don't know how you could have gotten it across, but if it was set, say, like in the 80s or something, like going back and reading Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, even though it takes place in the future, it was written in the 80s, so Reagan's president and everything. So, of course, then you're getting like super specific, and it's probably more than you really need to account for. And that's probably something you would play if you played like an Avengers game for as your campaign, and you play it all the time. But a more modern setting I think would have been great, and I would have enjoyed it a little bit more. Not that I didn't enjoy it, because I love the Captain America. I love the fact that, you know, he's a celebrity, and that's the way that people approached him. I thought that was fun.
So, yeah, I think that's enough there about the setting. I used Carnage as the main villain. Carnage has not appeared in the cinematic universe. I wanted someone.
Carnage is lame.
You think so?
He is so lame. He's lame as lame can be.
Oh, I specifically wanted an iconic Marvel villain that had not yet appeared in the cinematic universe.
From someone who doesn't even read comics that much, I can agree that Carnage is lame.
So I will admit, the only thing I really knew about Carnage was from back in the day when I subscribed to Sega Visions, the magazine. The Spider-Man Maximum Carnage. Yeah, that game series, and I read all about Carnage there. I had never been much of a Spider. I'd been a comics fan for years and years and years. Never a huge Spider-Man fan. My cousin was a huge Spider-Man fan, and I didn't want to cover the same territory as him, so I didn't read a lot of Spider-Man.
Carnage, it was the the natural escalation that takes place after Venom isn't extreme enough.
Before this game, because I knew you knew comics, Brian, I read the Wikipedia article on Carnage, like, front and back, like, multiple times to try to get the feel. And then there's, like, a Marvel wiki. I read the Marvel wiki. I read the Wikipedia wiki. I looked at panels. I really wanted to get the flavor of Cletus Cassidy's particular brand of insanity. I wanted to nail that down and really have that be effective. But the real thing I want to ask about for Carnage is the mechanics. I used a Yokel to stand in for Carnage. The Yokel is kind of a form of Loth or a high priest to Loth, but a high priest to the spider god. There are some web abilities, and pretty tough fight, CR 12 or CR 14 fight. So pretty tough fight for these 12th level Avengers. Could you tell the mechanics were just descriptions of Carnage completely bolted onto a different monster?
I don't think I did. I think it felt genuine. It felt like something that had been custom made for this game. And then I think at the end when you revealed, hey, it's just this regular monster and we called him Carnage and did some flavor things to him, That was actually kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, I don't think of Carnage's abilities necessarily. I think of his just his homicidal nature. So yeah, he has the symbiote, and that imbues him with certain powers. But I don't associate those powers with him like I associate them with Venom. To me, again, but that's because I don't really take Carnage seriously as a character.
Okay. Did it feel like Carnage? Whether you like him or not, take him seriously or not, in the game, did it feel like Carnage?
I think part of the setting made all of the characters feel kind of not like the characters, which in a way protects you as the GM from maybe not necessarily knowing the character or presenting the character as faithfully as you could, because the setting sort of distorts everything a little bit anyway. So yeah, I did. I felt it. I felt that it was carnage. Had it been a straight up Marvel system set in the modern times, I don't know. I can't tease that out, but the way that we played the game, yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's talk about combat. So, on the one hand, I walked out of this game and I was like, man, combat was way too easy. I had specifically designed the Hydra fight at the beginning to have an easy combat, to be really easy. Hey, you're taking, and I renamed everything, right? You guys were members of the Holy Order of the Shield, run by Abbot Nicholas the Furious. You were up against the cult of Hydra and taking out some last vestiges of that cult. And then, you know, Abbot Nicholas tells you that there's been, that the seers of the Holy Order of the Shield have detected this planar break, this rupture between the planes and some monsters having come through. These were the symbiotes. And he sends you on this kind of search and destroy mission to find these things and destroy them. So the first fight was meant to be easy, but we had several symbiote henchmen fights leading up to the Carnage fight. I think those were pretty easy. Were they, you blew through those as well? I meant for those to be a little more challenging. So the warehouse fight.
I'm having trouble recalling the specific fights. I remember combat overall being easy, and kind of going back to Hawkeye died, I think we kind of fell into the same trap with this group that we do in most of our previous campaigns, is that we simply didn't have any healing assets. So we had nothing to replenish hit points with when people did take damage.
Yeah, so that's the Hawkeye death is what I was going to lead up to, too, and say, hey, I really felt like combat was so easy on the one hand. On the other hand, Hawkeye did die.
Yeah.
So was it too easy? Was it part of what frustrates me about 5th edition? And I love 5th edition by and large. But we touched on this when we interviewed Tanner, or when we talked to Tanner about our L5R game in 5th edition. What frustrates me about 5th edition is that the difficulty dial, for me, it's so hard to get it dialed in because things are either way too easy or way too hard. And having this, the band of interesting combat, the band of, hey, from here to here, it could go either way, and it's going to be fun, is such a narrow band to dial in on. And what makes it even harder is, man, 5th edition is great because player experience really matters. Player strategy really matters. A group of 20th level characters who are playing poorly against a CR-18 are going to lose. A group of 20th level players or a group of 18th level players who are playing intelligently against a CR-20 monster are going to wipe the floor with it. So it's so hard to dial in combat. It's so hard to make combat the right level of challenging. And I think that came across here.
I would say that's fair.
When do you have... When is combat satisfying? What makes combat satisfying as a player?
That's a tough one.
Yeah, because again, I kind of have two opinions on that, right? I have the opinion where it goes flawlessly, when it goes smoothly, when I don't expend all of my abilities for that day. In player side brain, that's a great encounter. But then as far as actually experiencing the game, if you have that over and over and over again, that's just boring and there's no point to it. So the other side of my brain says, yeah, when this combat was challenging and when it had stakes and when it felt dangerous, that is also more fun than just winning all the time. So it's a hard question to answer.
So for me, I mean, it's contextual. It just depends on the game. So if we had a really exciting and challenging game and we got to the last encounter and the encounter was just us blowing off and completely annihilating the boss without, or the final encounter without even taking a hit, probably wouldn't enjoy it that much. But at the same time, if we had had a game where it was pretty easy to get through and then we get to the last encounter and we nearly wipe and it takes 30 minutes, that would probably feel like a slog. I think it just, I mean, this is all statistical. So if you look at a bell curve, there's probably a sweet spot as long as you have all the parameters set up from using the lessons that you've learned, you know, GMing and us as players. Probably 80% of the time, we're going to have a pretty satisfying encounter or pretty satisfying battle. And then you'll have the outliers where you, when you don't, when it's either too hard or too easy. So, it's just contextual. Just depends on how the game goes and how the dice rolls.
Yeah. One thing I'll share about combat that I've kind of picked up. I read a lot of essays about how, keep the hit point secret, DM. That way, if you need to add a few more or take some away, you know, you can do that without the players knowing. That's a good trick that I have used in the past, but I think I've matured beyond it. I've talked many times on the show about how I now put AC and hit points up on the board, and that is true. But did you guys know that I still have a dial that I use? I still have something I can use for combat to make it hard or easy, and I actually used it on Thursday.
Did you?
I did.
I did not know that.
No, me neither.
So the last combat, the very last elemental that you guys took out on Thursday was a bit of a slug, right?
Yeah.
So I could have played a little smarter and took you guys out. But the lever I pull now, and you'll notice it now that I'm saying it, but I don't care. Who are the monsters attacking?
Yeah.
If they're attacking the tank, then I think the encounter's probably a little hard. I'm taking it easy on you. If the monsters are being a little more ruthless and taking out the clothies, taking out the wizards, taking out the rogues, then hey, I'm trying to ramp up the difficulty.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
My difficulty control now is, do my monsters go after the tank or the damagers and controllers? The strikers and controllers, I should say. So that's the lever that I use right now.
That makes sense.
All right, let's sum up here, because we already touched on the whole cinematic thing. So Mike said it before, I'll say it again. If you want a cinematic game, tell the players that and encourage them to be cinematic. And I remember rewarding a lot of inspiration in this game for cinematic behavior. So again, we said this on previous podcasts, reward the behavior that you want to see. And in this game, there were no maps. There were no minis. I knew that we were going to investigate all over the place. So it was meant to be, hey, you can go anywhere. You can do anything. It's a movie. It's cinematic. This is not a dungeon crawl where we're going from room to room. It's a movie where we're going from scene to scene.
So, yeah, I think this is a good example when, yeah, there are no maps, there are no minis. But when I think back to the game, I still think of the setting that I have in mind, what things look like, what the city looked like that we were in, that we created at the time. I can't remove myself from the game without thinking of the setting, the warehouses, all of those things that we were in. It's kind of pretty cool.
Yep. All right, so to sum up. 12th level was fine, and if you want to play at higher level, just do it. You don't have to earn it. You've bought the game. The books are on your shelf. You have every right to play in a 12th level or a 15th level or a 20th level game tomorrow. If you're listening to this and you think that you have to earn your way to that, I'm giving you permission right now to roll a level 20 character. And play a level 20 game. It's fun. It's hard. It's harder. You're exposing more of the mechanics of the game, but it's worth doing. And for us, after years of playing and switching systems and always feeling like we had to earn our way to high level, it felt good. It felt so good to say, you know what? We're level 12 and we had a ton of hit points and a ton of, and I say we, I didn't play as a character, obviously, but I side with the player so much that it feels like a wee situation. But we had a lot of fun playing a high-level game. So it wasn't that much harder. It was worth doing. Do it. Go after it. Do it. The setting. What I wrote here is just make the setting appropriate. And I left it at that, Brian, because the setting and what's appropriate can it really changes for your players. I think of the four players we had in that game, three of them really liked the setting. Three of them really enjoyed playing Avengers in a medieval setting. It's a fun twist on a known thing. And it's a fun way to use a system that we're familiar with to have an adventure that's fun. But Brian didn't care for it. Brian had fun in the game.
Didn't hate it.
Brian didn't hate it. Brian had fun in the game, but Brian was also open with the feedback. So I knew, I took away, okay, we're not going to have an Avengers campaign. This was a one-shot. We're going to leave it at that. It was fun. It's a fun memory. But I didn't force Brian to participate in 6 months of something that didn't make sense to him. Okay, another thing I wrote down about Carnage. Reskin existing monsters. Oh, I can't emphasize that enough. Just change the flavor. Just change the flavor. There's an entire monster manual of like 300 monsters. What you're looking for is probably there. Just reskin it. Just change up. And I say reskin, I'm specifically referring to, I think it was Doom, Mike, wasn't it? Where you could keep the pinkies. Like someone had done a reskin of the pinky demons to be Barney the dinosaur.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
So people did a lot of mods on Doom where they did nothing but change the textures. And those were called reskins.
Yep.
So those existing monsters just made them look different. And same thing here. There's 300 monsters or more. If you buy some of the other books like, you know, Vola's Guide to Monsters, there's even, you have a ton of monsters to choose from. Find something existing that mostly works and reskin it and just change the flavor. Hey, the chain demon. One of the henchmen for the symbiotes was actually a chain devil. I just made the chains webs in the moment. Just reskin stuff. And then finally, combat. What I wrote down about combat is don't focus the whole game on combat, at least not now, at least not for me. And the reason I say that is it is so hard, and it remains hard for me to dial in that perfect level of difficulty for combat. So for me, as long as there's other stuff going on in the game, and the whole game doesn't rest on combat, then fair enough. If the whole game rests on combat, I don't know. I'm still, after years of playing 5th edition, not confident before I sit down at the table that I know what's going to happen, but, you know, until we get a few rounds into combat. If it's a new monster with an ability I've never used before, I don't know how that's going to play out. If one of my players can't make it, I don't know how it's going to play. I've got to find those levers. I'm still looking actively for levers to pull to control the difficulty of games. So combat is hard. Combat's hard to prep for as a DM, and I don't know a way around that other than don't focus your whole game on it. Anything to add, guys?
I think you summed it up.
All right, that's RPG Lessons Learned this week. Medieval Avengers. Oh, I do want to mention that Medieval Avengers, we played this game a little over a year ago. This is one of the games that I have played, at this point, have played past tense at Mace. I ran a Medieval Avengers game at Mace. So I am looking forward to, on a future episode, talking about how that game went with a group of perfect strangers, where it's the same thing, the tribality builds of the Avengers, but at a Mace table with strangers. I'm eager to know how that goes. I'm really looking forward to... So as we record this, I haven't actually run that yet. As you listen to it, it will have already happened. So, Brian, I'm really looking forward to Mace. We're beyond it. There's no point advertising for my games anymore, but we're going to get quite a lot of show content out of Mace.
Absolutely.
You guys are playing in a ton of games. I'm playing in a ton of games. We'll discuss those. And then I'm running two games. So, upcoming episodes, look for us to talk about Mace. In fact, I almost want to say, Brian, that we should record so that we do it all while it's fresh in our memories. We should knock out every Mace game literally back to back.
That's fair.
And we'll just knock out a whole bunch of episodes that way. All right. Thank you for listening. As a reminder, RPG Lessons Learned is a member of the RFC family of shows. Visit tfradio.net to listen to all the other podcasts that Brian has in his repertoire. It's a good bit of delving, and if you look hard, you can find an episode of RFC from back in 1999 when Brian was a wee lad of...
I was 20.
Of 20.
Yeah. That was 18 years ago.
Yeah. And don't look for a ton of quality.
No.
it was 18 years ago.
Our friend Jason was the first listener. I sent it to him and said, hey, can you check this out? And he said, this was 9 minutes of my life that I'll never get back.
Hopefully you don't feel that way about RPG Lessons Learned. But if you do, I want you to email us and tell us that. rpgllpodcast@gmail.com. Or hit us up on Twitter, rpgllpodcast. We're on Instagram as rpgllpodcast. And believe it or not, we're on Google Plus as RPG Lessons Learned.
Yeah, I'm not even following that. I need to fix that right now.
Poor Google Plus. I love it, and it's a great platform, but no one uses it.
Yeah.
But I love it, man. I love it. All right. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.